Welcome to the third preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of season 2018. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. What happened to Captain Hindsight?
After last week's show, if you haven't caught the rock show already, Mark was giving me a bit of crap for my backpedaling, and now I've got a new nickname. So Captain Hindsight's returning for our 10th year of doing the Supercoach Coach podcast. If you haven't tuned in already and aren't across that fact, so thank you very much to everyone who's listening for joining again for another season and another preseason. We are currently in the third show, so the second of our positional shows, and we're going to discuss the midfield this week, Mark.
Awesome. That should be lots to talk about.
If anything, we're going to have to really control ourselves because the list of midfielders is obviously long. There are plenty of good scoring options. There are plenty of even mid prices to look out for breakout candidates. But before we get into all that, just start the show as we do each week with a bit of a reminder about our Supercoach Coach League. So league registration is open now. You can find the link to register for those ranked leagues on supercoachcoach.com.au together with this podcast. So it's posted with the podcast post and also an invite to join our Supercoach Coach group. And we track the performance of our community across the season via that group. So if you haven't already, please sign up for that. And we do shout outs for our community high performers across the season during the podcast. And of course, open leagues, I'm going to start sending out those open league codes. So if you're just wanting to join a league without having to register, there'll be codes available on that page as well. And a reminder for those interested in supporting or able to support the show, we've got a platform for that, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. Jump on from $1 a week to help out the show. You can cancel anytime. We don't charge across the off season, and it makes a really big difference to the sustainability of the show. And we do always want to emphasize that. It's a massive thanks to our Patreons that have kept us going, especially in the last couple of years. And this is extending into our third year now, Mark. We've continued to try and offer a little bit more as a thank you to that community each year. And this year, we'll plan on doing another one of our pre-kickoff team reveals to hopefully help out that Patreon community a bit more as well. That's enough of that. If you have nothing to add, Mark, I'll take us into the midfield show.
Let's get going, mate.
Awesome. How we like to tackle the midfield shows by breaking it up into a few different sections. We like to start by looking at the players that have scored 115 or more in the previous season, or who have the capacity to do that, or have done that in seasons past. That list is often very small, but they're very, very often the season defining players because they're the top scoring players of Supercoach. And if you don't have them, it makes it hard to vie for the 50K. Last year, there was only four players that managed that. And Gary Ablett only managed 14 games. Josh Kelly is a close fifth with an average of 114.3. And then after that, it drops off to 111, being the next best averaging midfielder, who's Clayton Oliver, who came in sixth last year. So that 115 mark is kind of the golden point that we're looking for. If a midfielder looks like he's able to hit that, all of a sudden they become pretty close to must-haves. Whether or not you start with them, of course, is another story. But over the course of the season, players that can average 115 plus are the absolute rolled gold picks that you need to try and fill your team with. Apart from the 115 plus type players, we also look at the 110 bracket. So the amount of players that average 110 is significantly higher. We had 12 players average 109 plus last year, and quite a few more in that 105 to 110 range. These players are generally consistent enough to build out the depth in your midfield without sacrificing too much point scoring. If you catch them during the right patch of scoring, they can even average 115 plus in your team. So they're generally good enough to sit in your team, but they're not must-have type players. If you kind of want to be looking at these guys in terms of picking them up at the right price. If you're starting with them, you're hoping for a little bit of improvement in that 110 range. You're trying to pick the 110 averaging players that can take the step up to 115 this year. Mm. And then outside of that, you've obviously got the blokes who are meandering around the 100 range. So a lot of midfielders tend to average between 90 to 100, but the ability to step up and become an elite midfielder of the comp and to average that 110 plus, that the key 110 plus, to make it into consideration for our top eight mids or the eight mids you get to select in Supercoach. We're looking for players that are able to take that step, offer a little bit of value and essentially break out. Of course, because they haven't done it before, these are normally a higher risk pick, so you don't want to pick too many of them for fear of ending up with too many not so impressive premiums by season end. The final list that we're going to look at are the mid-price players. So blokes, the price between 200 and 400,000 in the midfield, sometimes even 450, you might consider a mid-price player who can step up to be at least 105 averaging, preferably 110 plus. These are guys that offer value, but in the midfield, you tend to want to take mid-price risks a little bit less often than in the back line and in the forward line, where the top tier of scoring isn't quite as pronounced as it is in the midfield. So that's the way we'll attack the show, Mark. It's quite a long preamble there for myself, Mark, sure, but that's how we'll be attacking the show. Hopefully that sets a good context for how we like to go about the midfield. Do you have anything to add to that?
I just think the listeners are probably ready to hear from the real expert on the show.
Brilliant. All right. And with that, we'll start off with the first question from @GoodEddie on Twitter. Do you need to pick value in the midfield, or should he be looking at picking players that he thinks can exclusively average, you know, 115 plus and be able to play close to 22 games? He got burnt last year picking too many underperforming guns that scored in that 100 to 105 range. So I already touched on this a little bit, Mark, so I'll leave this question completely to yourself.
Well, I don't think that you want to take too many lessons from just one season. Last season did seem to be a bit of an outlier in the fact that some of the previous guns of the competition faded, like Pendlebury dropped down under 110 for the first time in a really long time. And Treloar, like people that you expected to go ahead didn't actually do it. So I don't think that's necessarily normal. Although players do have up years and down years, I think that you probably want to get a balance. The teams that I like normally have one or two punts in the midfield. So they have a player like a Zach Merritt last year or someone like that that you think that can really jump up and go to the next level, but the other picks are sort of roll gold or going for a bit of value like a Fife player. So I think you want a combination of both and you don't want to go all out on either strategy.
Agree with that. You got to play the cards that are dealt each season. So this season brings a completely different equation to last, and you want to not be sort of hamstrung by the lessons of the past too much, even though it's good to try and learn from past mistakes. So we'll move on to the 115 plus averaging midfielders from 2017 as the first topic. So we've got Patrick Danger. No, there weren't many, but they'll cost a fair mint if you want to pick up all five regardless. So we've got Paddy Dangerfield, who averaged 136, priced at 750,000. Dusty averaged 119, priced at 656,000. Mitchell, 119, 653. Ablett, 115, 631. And Kelly, 114, 628. Obviously, Gary Ablett's the shakiest one of all of those, especially in terms of injury history. But as we discussed sort of in that first show, Mark, Ablett's return to Geelong adds an interesting wrinkle for Patrick Dangerfield as well. Being priced at 750,000, if there's a chance that he's going to start off the season poorly, you'd actually prefer to save potentially 100K by picking him up a little bit later. That's controversial because he was both our first pick player for the first show back, but have you pondered that any more over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, look, I have. I keep thinking about it, and I can see a team starting without Dangerfield this year and doing quite well, but I don't see doing it myself. I think that the Ablett of old, he's averaged over 130 for two seasons in a row. It wasn't unpredictable that he was going to do this. We saw this coming for a long time. He can still score even if he's playing up forward. His captain scores are so awesome. His durability is really good. Trading a player in, like, say his basement is 650,000. It could actually be lower than that, but say his price got down to 650. That's still a really hard player to bring into your team when you're trading rookies out. You're almost looking to upgrade a premium to get into that, or two rookie downgrades to get enough money to get to do the upgrade. So sometimes it's easier just to start with a player like that.
I agree. Dangerfield has the ability to punch out scores close to 200. So even though he could drop, he could just as equally punish you for not starting him. So I'm still in the camp of starting with Dangerfield. That takes us to a question here from Seeker Supercoach on Twitter. Can we start all three of Danger, Dusty, and Titch? Or is that too much money to tie up? So I think based on our conversation so far, Mark, both of us are leaning a bit away from Ablett. But I think you could chuck Kelly sort of as much into the equation as those first three blokes. He continued to grow in the second half of last year, and there's no reason why he can't keep improving, and he's playing for a team that should still be in finals contention. Mitchell showed exceptional consistency last year. Dusty Martin could even take the mantle from Dangerfield in terms of top scoring player. Like, it's pretty hard to make a decision to pass on any one of these blokes, but surely we can't be picking all four, let alone three. Can we pick two? Where's your head sitting with how to bring in all these top scoring players?
Well, I think that my rule would be you'd start with at least three of the absolute top bracket, and I would add Fife into that top bracket, absolutely. So I think that you'd want to pick at least three of those sort of five or six guys. That's the core that you're building your whole team around. I can understand that some teams might string it out to four, but that's a lot of money to be investing in that small part of the field. And I think that you have to some extent, gamble that they're not all going to repeat their seasons from last year, because it's really unlikely that they do all have really, really successful seasons. So you just got to pick your spot and work out which one you're willing to back, I guess. I think that for mine, Dusty and Dangerfield are absolute locks. Mitchell is someone that I can't find a reason not to pick him. I think he's got under 100 once last year and just broke possession records, and he's still young and just still will have the number one role at Hawthorn in the midfield. So can't really find a good reason not to pick him, but he's the one that probably gets squeezed out for me. And Kelly is someone that maybe I would like to pick up at some point, but probably unlikely to start him.
Even though at the start of each year, when you look at those 115 plus players, they look like a lock to maintain that level of scoring. We've actually found over the course of the last 10 seasons that we've been doing this, the proportion of those players that manage to stay in that bracket is really, really small. Oftentimes, you know, we're talking 40%. It's definitely less than half of the players end up maintaining that scoring. So last year, for example, only Dangerfield and Ablett were the ones that were in this price bracket. Martin, Mitchell, and Kelly are all new additions. And there were three other blokes that managed 115 last year that couldn't quite replicate it again this year. I like what you're saying there, Mark, in terms of you just kind of have to take a punt on who you think will fall out. Martin and Dangerfield are locked for me. I couldn't pick between Mitchell and Kelly at the moment. I was a massive Mitchell fan last year, but he needs to rack up a lot of the ball to get 119 points. Like, there's a bloke that needs close to 40 possessions each game to do that. And his consistency was just on point last year. If you introduced an element of inconsistency to Mitchell's game, he'll tumble out of that 119 pretty quickly, I would have thought.
Normally, the guys that fall off the perch are the ones that have made a really, really big jump the season before. Like, you had Kelly jumping up nearly 30 points last year, and it's really hard to back that up. And there's not many players that have a straight-up trajectory like Kelly has had so far. There's normally, they get a heap of extra attention the following season or something, and they have to adjust to that. And there's some sort of like dips and troughs. It doesn't just normally go directly straight up as Kelly's have. So I think it's going to be really hard for him to back that up again. Mitchell, being a little bit older, just gets so much of the ball. Not sure whether he can replicate that, but I think he seems very, very likely to average 110 over the course of the year if he can avoid injury. So he seems like a bit of a safer pick to me out of those two. But I think that Danger, Dusty, and Fife are the three that are locked for me in those first three spots in the super or super elite.
I agree with that. I'd take Fife over Mitchell or Kelly.
Should we just touch on Dusty about why we're actually picking Dusty ahead of Mitchell and Kelly as well? Because this is the first season that Dusty's averaged over 110. For me, it's because he barely ever misses a game. I don't think he's going to necessarily have a premiership hangover. I think that this sort of scoring potential has been coming for a while, and it's all been about his endurance on the field, and he seems to have finally developed that. So I think he can easily replicate what he did last year and even go higher.
Same. I think we've talked about Dusty and Danger, and probably like Gray's the other one that we might have talked about in the sort of 5-6 years preceding this, that are able to replicate the Gary Ablett type scoring and move into that 125 mark. They can hit the scoreboard, they can break tackles, and so they can make the most out of their possessions, and they're really strong in the contest. So even if they get heavily tagged, your ability to stop them is quite limited. And Five probably follows in that mold as well, and that's why we have him in our top three as well. And so I don't see Dusty sliding, similar to yourself, Mark. And if anything, you know, he still hasn't hit that 125 mark that we previously talked about. Martin still had a slow start to the first half of the year. So if you look at just the back half of his year, he's, you'd argue, still considered underpriced. And further to that, Dusty Martin, out of all the players in Supercoach, scores the most from using his possessions rather than gaining his possessions, a little nugget that Champion Data gave to us. His potential for scoring should theoretically be as high as Dangerfield's, if not higher, because when he does get the ball, there's nobody else in the comp that can score more points than him at the moment. That was pretty similar to Gary Ablett previously. Like, they never waste the ball and make really good attacking decisions that, you know, turn into a fair amount of points, whether it be from inside 50 entry or from a score assist or whatever it may be. Dusty still has room to grow. Now we'll move to more of a bargain buy section. And I had Fife in this section, but, you know, we jumped the gun because he literally just shows so much undeniable value. He's had a rough run with injury the last 2 years, and there's no reason why he can't bounce back. He was the best player before Dangerfield took over that mantle, and then Martin did last year. But Fife has been down with injury. It's not because of any other reason than that he's been slightly off colour. And I think he'll push his name up to contend for the Brownlow together with Danger and Martin this year. So I don't think we need to spend much more time on him, Mark.
I think it's just his durability is some concern, or a reasonably significant concern. It's just that his ceiling is so high and you're getting such a discount, and he looks fit. I just don't see any reason why you wouldn't pick him. I think he should be in 100% of competitive teams.
Now, there's one other name that, in terms of starting him, is definitely not at the same bracket as Dangerfield, Martin, and Fife. But in terms of scoring potential, he's a fantasy scoring pig, and that's Tom Rockliffe. Last year, in patches, Mark, he absolutely smashed it for us, averaging, you know, 125 plus. But injury has not been kind to Rockliffe either. And through a number of collisions, not just soft tissue injuries, but in some cases just pure bad luck, he's stayed off the field for quite a lot of time. I mean, his average seemed to be affected by his inability to stay on park. So he's priced at an average of 96, which seems an absolute steal for a bloke that at one, you know, was averaging 125 as recent as the first half of last year. Yeah. Having said that, his downside is very real, which both of us wrote out last year as well. So I've got a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth.
Well, there's a few factors here that make Rockliffe probably a trickier selection. And the number one thing is his injury. The number two thing is that he's playing at a different club now. Brisbane, there wasn't anyone really competing with him for scores. There was sort of a really strong top end, like you had Zorko and Steph Martin and Rocky. But then, like, the lower end of that team just weren't scoring any points, which meant that the scores were really, really high at the top, whereas Port don't play that game at all. Was there anyone from Port that even averaged over 100 last year? I think it would have been close. Maybe Ollie just got there. Paddy would have as well, but there's a few of them averaging up around that 100 mark, and so the points are shared from Port Adelaide, and I don't think he's just going to go out and get the 150 every week like he could for the Lions when fit. But I think he's also missed JLT1 with an injury of some sort, so big line through Rocky for me.
Before we move on to talk about the congested Supercoach midfields, I think it's relevant to maybe delve and spend a bit more time on Gary Ablett, and I'm happy to do that, especially now that he's returned to Geelong. If he plays, you know, even 18, 20 games, and he's able to score in the same Gary Ablett esque way as we know he can, he still might be a good pickup even if he doesn't play the full 22 games. If, you know, he's a 120 plus type scorer. What are your thoughts on Gary Ablett? What are your thoughts on his ability to return to that level of scoring? Or I'm assuming if he stays at his current average, which is 115, and chances are Ablett's not going to play 22 games and he's probably not worth it. So you need to see potentially some improvement to pick him up. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think the question is how much improvement and what story are you going to tell yourself? Is it that the last 3 years he's been unhappy at the Gold Coast and that now that he's back at Geelong, he's going to be happy, his body's going to be right, and he's going to go back to the old Gary Ablett? Now, if you can tell yourself that story, then I can see why you'd pick him. I think he's played 14, 14 and 6 games in the last 3 years, 15 the season before that. It's really hard to pick someone in that situation unless you think they're going to average 20 points more than they are now. So if he comes out and averages 135, 140 at the start of the year over the first 7 or 8 rounds and then gets injured, that's probably still a pretty good result. Or if he plays throughout the season and averages 125, 130, that's a really good result. But they seem like less likely than likely to happen, especially with sort of competing with Dangerfield for points. It's a bit of a glory days romantic perspective to pick Gary Ablett, but we all knew it was going to come the day where his time was done. If he was available as a forward, I would pick him, but I just can't trust him as a mid.
To play devil's advocate, I think Chris Scott mentioned only last week that they're going to push Dangerfield forward a bit more and actually keep Ablett in the midfield. Whereas a lot of people saw Ablett moving into the forward line in the twilight of his career, they're actually planning for our number one, arguably still number one midfielder, to spend time down forward and let Ablett play in the midfield instead. So they must have some level of confidence in him. I just think the injury risk is too high. Those numbers that you read out, Mark, are borderline scary. You would really, really need to be hoping for him to be averaging about that 125, 130 mark while he's fit, so that he at least goes up in price and you get the high scoring, so that when you do have to commit to trading him, which is more likely than not, you get enough gains to get out still ahead. Because I think hoping that he plays even 20 games averaging 125 plus does seem a little bit optimistic, and that's coming from a Geelong supporter. He is 34. All his contemporaries are retired, and we're talking about him returning to be not just, you know, a top tier midfielder, but in order to get those numbers, he'd be in Brownlow contention again.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a Hail Mary pick. If you're going for the 50K and you think that the risk is worth it, then do it. But if you want to be remaining in contention and going for a league win potentially, I think it's pretty difficult to justify that sort of selection.
All right, let's move on to talking about congested Supercoach midfields, Mark. There's a few that I want to talk about. We've got Adelaide with Gibbs arriving. We've got Geelong with Ablett arriving. We've got the same old Sydney discussion with Heaney moving into the midfield as well. And then we've got, you know, the Collingwood situation, which again hasn't changed from last year, still as congested. Maybe let's start off with Geelong because we just talked about Ablett and Dangerfield, so it's easy to segue to. Mitch Duncan and Joel Selwood. Yeah. Look, Duncan is unlikely to be a serious Supercoach consideration. He averaged 110 last year, which was massive for him, but with Ablett's arrival, the first time he's done that, in all likelihood, you're not picking him. But it's the Joel Selwood selection that's really interesting. He's averaged 115 for multiple seasons now, but his ability to stay on park has been questionable as well. But priced at an average of 102, he definitely presents a fair bit of value. And now Joel Selwood has gone from, in 3 years, our number one midfielder to our number three. Does that change things, Mark?
Yeah, it probably does change things a little bit because Selwood had copped the tag a lot in the past. And that's probably one of the reasons, well, I guess you'd want Dangerfield anyway, but bring those guys back in is a big benefit to him, you would imagine, because when he isn't tagged, he was just, in previous years, he was just so consistent and so easily able to put up those big numbers. I guess the other side of that is that he's now going to be competing with the likes of Ablett and Danger and the rise of Duncan for points. And so I think he's really, really unlikely to break into the 120 sort of averaging bracket, which I know he's been up near before. Geelong would have to finish top two, top of the ladder for him to get anywhere near that, I think, which is quite a possibility, obviously. But at this stage in his career, I don't think that Selwood's really going to be pushing the 120 mark anymore.
I don't know. I'm a little bit more optimistic. He has had interrupted preseasons for the last three preseasons. The season before that, he averaged 123. Dangerfield did arrive in Geelong to alleviate some of the stress, but oppositions quickly realized that the impact of tagging Dangerfield was much more minimal than tagging Selwood, so Selwood continued to get the tag. With an older Ablett and with a Dangerfield, Selwood being a genuine third now, I would argue, I think there's quite a lot of potential there for points. So I'm going to be tempted on that one, but I am a Geelong supporter, so you know, you can colour me biased. Age 30, so shouldn't be dropping off the cliff yet. I would think that the person that's going to struggle in terms of a share of midfield points is not going to be Selwood. It's going to be Mitch Duncan. It's going to be Menegola. It's going to be Blitzarves. It's going to be the other blokes, Cam Guthrie. I would not think that's going to stop Joel Selwood from scoring points. So I'm still on the fence. I'm quite tempted by this one. Clearly, Mark and I have a different point of view on that, and I'm certain a lot of super coaches would have mixed feelings about that selection as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a massive Selwood fan. I've had him heaps in the past. It was pretty frustrating to own last year, and if you say that he's fit, then I think, yeah, you're right, the potential's there. You've only got so many midfield spots to fill, though.
Absolutely. All right, none of these conversations are going to be easy with these congested midfields, so I don't think we need to reach a consensus, Mark, to move on. Let's move to Adelaide next, where we've got another interesting situation with an addition to their midfield. What effect will Bryce Gibb have on the Adelaide midfielders, Matt and Brad Crouch and Rory Sloane? And is Gibbs a viable selection? What are your thoughts, Mark?
Gibbs, no from me. I think that he's had a few seasons over 100 before. I'm sure he'll have a pretty good season and he's very durable, but couldn't imagine actually picking him in for my team. I think that Sloane and Matt Crouch are much more interesting selections. I think that Gibbs is going to influence how much they score over the year and maybe puts a little bit of cap over someone like Matt Crouch about how much ball he's going to be able to actually get. It may free up Sloane. I know that Gibbs has ended up having a defending sort of player play on him quite a bit, so that may free up Sloane, even if it's only two or three extra games a year. Crouch may free up Sloane a little bit. Look, I think that Matt Crouch interests me a bit. If Adelaide finish top two again, then Sloane and Crouch will probably both end up being pretty decent picks. They'd need to really finish in the top couple, which they probably should. It's tricky to pick players in a midfield where you expect four players potentially to average over 100. It's pretty hard for four players to average over 100 and for then to really extend out to that 120 mark in that bracket. Look, I think that Matt Crouch and Sloane are probably still pretty decent picks. I guess just there might be a little bit capped on the upside.
On to the Sydney midfield, Mark. Yes, now that we've got Heaney available, we'll probably pick him, but in the forward line, Kennedy, Hanabry, and then we've got a question here from Asinine Mind on Twitter about Luke Parker as well. They all dropped right off last year and averaged close to that 100 mark. So all have, you know, potentially upwards of 10 points of value. Hanabry dropped down to 97. He was one of the 115 averaging mids just the season before. They did start off the year terribly last year, and if they hit the ground running this year, they could redeem what was, you know, pretty poor Supercoach season across the board for those three midfielders.
Yep.
Are you tempted at all?
Not even one little bit, mate. I think that you'd have to have, you would have to have a fair bit of gamble in you to be picking one of these Sydney guys, because I just think it's super unpredictable about what's actually going to happen. You're right about it, the points that you raised, that there are reasons to pick them. From what I've heard, Hanabry is probably the slowest to come back over the preseason and had a bit of a few issues over the preseason. So, and Kennedy, despite how super reliable he is the oldest of the bunch. So the one that probably interests me the most is Luke Parker, but I just don't trust any of them personally.
I mean, even though Kennedy is the oldest, he's still only 30.
Yeah, because Selwood's only 30, you think 30's young. Mate, I'm over 30. It gets harder when you get to 30.
Lukey Parker, 25 years old, though. And Hanabry's younger than that as well. Like, I understand that there's a lot of risk. I understand it feels like, you know, rolling the dice, but yeah, surely one of them gets back to 115 this year.
If Sydney have a good year, you would think that would be a very good chance.
And so there's potential.
But which one? I think that you literally, yeah, it feels like literally rolling a dice.
Joel Selwood feels a bit like rolling a dice. Supercoach team. All right, I just want to close out that Sydney conversation by saying, even though I agree with you in saying that it's tough to pick, I think that there's definitely value in one of the three of them. Parker looks like the best bet. Let's move to the Collingwood midfield, Mark. At Matthew Grimston asked about ranking the Collingwood mids. I've listed the four of them here that are relevant. Adams, Pendlebury, Treloar, side bottom. Pendlebury seems like obvious value, but he's let us down. Are you going to go back to the well?
That's a really good question. He seems like, as far as rolling a dice goes, and I think that at some point you do actually have to roll the dice a little bit and just, there's just going to be some guessing elements in this. And I think that Pendles is one that I'd be purely guessing on. Like, he is 30. We've seen a reasonably noticeable decline over the last couple of years in his scoring and his importance maybe to that Collingwood midfield about the sort of role that he takes. And is that likely to continue, that slow slide? I mean, he had a slide last year and still averaged 106.
I would argue that with Pendlebury, unlike Selwood, Parker, Kennedy, Pendlebury's slide has coincided with Collingwood's decreased relevance in terms of, you know, finals appearance and winning games over the last few years.
I love it when people say Collingwood and decreased relevance in the same sentence.
He misses Dane Swan too. He definitely misses Dane Swan.
But Taylor Adams could be his new Dane Swan. Yeah, I have absolutely no idea about Pendles. I think that in 2 or 3 months, he's one that could, like, you could just look back and go, oh, it was so obvious that he was going to come back and score 120. Or it was so obvious that he wasn't and he was on a decline. Doesn't feel obvious right now.
All right, I'm just going to read out his average since 2011, just for context. 129, 125, 126.5, 124.5, and then dropped to 116. The year after that, we all thought, absolute bargain. This bloke can definitely average 120 plus. Let's pick him. Average 118 for the year. Last year, injury afflicted year, dropped down to 106. He seems like, even if he's not going to get back to that 120 plus range, he still seems like a pretty sure thing for a 115. He moved to half back a little bit last year, which is an interesting wrinkle because of the introduction of the new young Collingwood midfielders. So if that has some correlation with the score drop off, then there's a chance that that will sustain into 2018. But he seems like a player that's hard to pass up on. And based on what you started off by saying, like, if you were to roll a dice, it's likely to be on Pendle. When you look at that scoring history, like, that's exactly why, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's got that scoring history for a really good reason. That is because he is just silky. He's so effective with his possessions that his points, he doesn't need a lot of the ball. He just always hits targets going inside 50. He sets up goals. He just does everything that Supercoach loves. So it's really hard for him not to average 100. And so it would not surprise me at all if he gets a 10-point bump.
If he's still a maybe, I'm guessing there's no conceivable way that you end up picking two Collingwood midfielders.
No. If you raise bloody Adam Treloar's name, I'll scream.
We're supposed to rank these guys, Mark, so it's pretty hard for me to avoid that. There is a decent chance that Treloar goes back to averaging 110. He averaged 107, 106, 111, and then last year dropped to 101. There's no reason why it can't lift back up. Treloar seems like there's definitely value in store. Whether it's enough to make him worth picking, whether it's enough to pick him over the other options this year. Like, again, there's so many good options in the midfield this year. You almost need an exceptional reason to be picking one of these players. And only for that reason would I pass on Treloar Adams. In previous years, if I looked at Treloar, I would have been pretty darn tempted. But I'm going to struggle to pick Selwood. I'm going to struggle to pick Pendlebury. I'm going to struggle to pick Mitchell. Too many options. If he ends up just averaging 100 for the year and moving sideways, you've invested a lot of money into a pick that is not of ultra premium quality and that you have to commit a trade for only a 10-point increase in average, which is not a very good feeling. Now, let's go to the next rung of players. These are all blokes that have averaged 110 in seasons past. The question is whether or not they can take that to the next level. I think if they were just to maintain, you would end up passing on them. I'm going to list them all out together. I don't think we need to spend too much time going through them with a fine-tooth comb because, as I said, the options are so good this year. But Clayton Oliver last year had an absolute smashing season. He's, like I mentioned at the top of the show, the sixth highest averager from last year. Can he go to another level? Dane Zorko also had a career-best year, averaged 111. You got Zaki Merritt, who averaged 109. There's a couple of seasons now that he's in that bracket. If Essendon move up, could he finally move to a 115 type player? Lachie Neal has been a top eight, top five averaging mid. In patches, he definitely can do some serious damage. He seems like a pretty decent pick as well. You got Mark Murphy at 108. Bonton Pelly average 105. So there's definitely value potentially in there. Dane Beams at 101, and Trent Cotchin 101 as well. I only put him in there because of you, Mark, but he's averaged 110 in patches before too.
Yeah, I missed him last year, the first time in a while. So out of that list, I think that Zorko appeals to me. I think that he averaged 110 last year. There's been a bit of a steady build-up for him. Without Rockliffe there, he might have a bit more responsibility at the Lions. I think that he just has the ability to score massive, and it wouldn't surprise me if he averaged 120 over a season at some point. Zach Merritt. I had him over the back half of last year and he was quite frustrating because that's when he started to get tagged a little bit. And I still think that when you look at the Essendon midfield, he's clearly the player that you would run with. Heppel just doesn't break games apart often enough and Merritt just continues to get to every contest. And I'm sure he's still going to post another decent average. But can he learn to actually handle that attention or not? There's a few doubts for me there. I wouldn't pick Nielsen as I'm taking Fife. Mark Murphy, I think we saw a great season, probably close to his top end last year. The Bont is a really interesting one. I think that there's a lot of people out there that will pick him. At some point, you feel that he has the capability to break out and average 120 or 120 plus. He's just that good a player, and Supercoach or Champion Data just absolutely love him. But there's some chance that he may be capped into that 100 to 110 average for a little while if he doesn't get enough of the ball. So his possession counts are not quite as high as some of the other midfielders out there, so he may struggle to really, really get up to that top end in regards to scoring. So that worries me a little bit, even though he is so effective. Beams has done it before, but given his body, I think it'd be really, really hard to pick him. Oliver. I couldn't pick a player in their third year at that price. There may come a time during the season where I think Oliver's a really good pick if you can get a bit more value for him.
I think the two blokes that I'm most likely to pick from that list are Neal and Bont. Bont for his upside, Neal for the fact that he's a proven commodity. I think that Neal has shown that he can score well with a perfectly fit Fife, and without a perfectly fit Fife, he's great in the contest. He makes good decisions with the ball. He's just not an exciting pick, but he's proven time and time before that doesn't really matter. He'll just show up with the Supercoach points anyway. Bont's upside is obvious, but his inconsistency is worrying. You'd think that if Bulldogs make the top eight, Bont would be a big part of that, and therefore he could return to his best. But we didn't talk about Bulldogs in quite that glowing a light when we were talking about the top eight predictions. So based off that, I probably wouldn't go for him. But if you were gung-ho about the Bulldogs, then I'd be gung-ho about Bont. Probably the two others that are unlucky to miss that list are Zorko and Merritt. I think they'll average 110 again. And they're very consistent, but they don't have sort of massive spikes in scoring where you could be punished for not picking them over a stretch of time. Those two are unlucky to miss, but I'd definitely be very open to picking them up throughout the season as the opportunities present. On to breakout players now, Mark. So these are blokes that haven't quite managed that 110 plus before. Actually, one of them have, and that's Jack Stephen, but he's only done it once, and that was quite a while ago now. So I'm just going to read them out pretty similar to the former list. We've got Ward, Seb Ross, Jack McRae, Dyson Heppel, Ollie Wines, Paddy Cripps, Dylan Shield, and Lachie Whitfield. These are all guys who are young, talented, and have the potential, although have not shown the ability yet to sort of step above. Cripps, obviously, is the name that is, I think, brought up the most in fantasy circles. He's been affected by the team he plays and a little bit of injury to stop him sort of getting to that point already. But Cripps is also, is it only his fourth year, Mark?
Fifth year, mate. He only played those couple games in his first.
So he's still very, very young, and he's the one that probably starts off in pole position out of all those guys that I talked about. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I think that he's already averaged 107 over a season, and that was in a season where he really, really built in the back of that year and averaged a lot more than that. And I think the last 10 games or so were over 100 and looked to be ready to go last year. Injury didn't go his way. So he seems like a player that could average 115, 120 over the course of the season. So out of those guys, he seems to have the pedigree and the value in the price, and I love no Doherty there to compete with for points this year. So there's a few factors I think that make Paddy Cripps a pretty good pick. There's a fair bit of gamble in picking Cripps, but I can see why a lot of people would. And of all the value selections and the breakout selections, he's definitely one that would be close to the top of my list.
If I had to throw caution to the wind on Cripps, it's that the knock on Cripps is not his ability to win the ball. He's basically almost the best in the comp at that. I think only Kennedy's probably ahead of him by the numbers. The problem is his ability to then do something with it. He plays for Carlton, so he's always under pressure. He's literally at the bottom of the pack or being smashed in a tackle as he's getting those clearances for his team. His ability to then find an open option or have support in the team to be able to do something with that possession is an issue, and that's not purely down to Cripps. He could definitely grow in that regard, but he'll still be somewhat hamstrung by Carlton's ability to provide him options and support him. And so unless Carlton improve, he will have sort of cards stacked against him to taking that next step. But showing the growth that he already has, there's some chance that he could break through that himself.
Yeah, look, I don't really have any reservations in picking Cripps. I think he's a really good selection, and I'm not sure whether he'd make my starting team, but I'm quite happy to recommend him to others.
Jack Stephen being the only guy on that list who's already hit 110 in seasons past.
Yeah, I think that was 5 or 6 years ago. I think he's had the first preseason in quite a while that's gone well for him. So, and St Kilda, surely someone's going to average a decent amount for them at some point. I guess he will cop a bit of attention if he does start going well, but I don't know. Like, I think there's a really good chance he sort of averages about 105, which means that he turns out to be an okay pick at his price, but not really very inspiring or season defining. So I hesitate to recommend against him because I think he has the potential there. He's not in consideration for me, but I wouldn't tell people not to pick him.
With Port and Essendon stocks on the rise over the off season, would you see Wines and Heppel potentially sort of seeing positive Supercoach gains as a result of that?
Potentially. I think that there's other players at those teams that I'd consider picking above those two guys, though. You probably know about the Wines more than most of us because he's been quite frustrating and you've had him a bit over the last couple of years. And Heppel, I don't think, is an elite Supercoacher.
I'd agree with that on Heppel. And I think Wines has similar issues in terms of ability to use the ball. He's sort of a complete flip to Dusty in the sense that, you know, Dusty makes so much of the possessions that he does get. Wines is probably the opposite to that. He works hard for the possessions, but he lets himself down with the disposal. And I think Heppel, Wines and Cripps, that all three of them need to learn to overcome that to take that next step. And that's probably why they're still on the breakout list for now. Or hit the scoreboard more, one or the other. But Selwood had similar issues quite a few years ago when he was trying to break out from that 110 bracket to take that next step. And when he finally did, he averaged 123. So it's nothing stopping these blokes growing and getting better. They're all very young, but with the amount of options we have this year, it's hard to take that risk right up front. Are you tempted by any of the GWS blokes, Ward, Sheil or Whitfield?
No, not particularly, to be honest. I think that Callum Ward is not Supercoach relevant anymore, except in a draft context. Dylan Sheil, pretty similar. He seems to have big games, but is unable to do it on a really consistent basis. And Whitfield, probably we haven't seen enough of him, and he maybe has a higher ceiling. So out of the three, maybe Whitfield, I think, that just has that the potential to get into the bracket that you'd need him to. But none of those guys are in consideration for me.
Lastly, McRae, I mean, he doesn't have a very penetrating kick, but he often doesn't waste his possessions either. Averaged 107 last year. probably considered a breakout year off a previous high of 100, entering his sixth year this year. So still very young and still in sort of that golden time of being able to sort of step up and lift yourself as one of the preeminent midfielders in the comp. Do you think he has that sort of ability in him?
Yeah, I do. Jackson McRae was awesome to own last year. Was a forward, which was a lot nicer. I can see it happening, but there's a fair bit of gamble there at his price. You're not getting a huge discount.
So let's move to the last section for the podcast, the mid-price players. As is the usual for the midfield, we like to pick rookies and we like to pick Roll Gold Premium. So mid-price players tend to be traps, even when they look really, really good, like Jaeger and Swallow in seasons past, they have tended to be traps. As a result, we're not going to talk about too many of them, and we're going to talk about them, I'm assuming, with a level of apprehension. But there's promise nonetheless, and every season somebody will break out from their mid-price bracket to be a premium. So we'll go through the four best options to my eye anyway. You can let me know if I missed anyone, Mark. We got a question here from Lincoln Beggs about Jaeger, Amira, and Cornelio. Quite a few people asking about Cornelio. I talked about Griffin in the first podcast back at 270k, so he's by far the cheapest, whereas Cornelio's in the 400 range and Jaeger's 310. And then Libertore, who we've seen average 110 plus in the past, only averaged the 80 last year. Whether or not he can take that step back up to be, 100, even at 105, if he lifts his average by 25 points, he'd be a decent M8.
I'm glad that you put the thing at the start there to say that we're going to be apprehensive, because I'm pretty positive about all of these guys, to be completely honest. Maybe I shouldn't be. I think that Libba being fit and maybe getting in the right headspace, I think he really could get back up to that 105, 110 mark. He at his best is an absolute gun, and I think that it would not surprise me at all that he gets back to his best at some stage, and this year is probably a pretty good year for that, a year sort of on from the premiership hangover. So I think at 430 for a former premium, that's actually a really, really good price. So he's in consideration for me. Cornelio was in the first team that I picked, and he has not left my team since then. Number two draft pick, just has that extra pedigree. He has averaged 105 before, whereas Libba's like only averaged 5 more points than that, and had a lot more seasons than Cornelio. The main thing that worries about me about him is his ankle, but he's shown scoring history. He can play a tagging role in the midfield and still score hundreds. Out of all the GWS mids this year, I think that him and Cali will score the highest, so I think Cornelio is a really good pick.
When I look at the skill level of all the midfielders in the GWS team, he doesn't really stand out to me. 105 seems like sort of the upside for Cornelio, but if I'm going to put my hand up and say I probably haven't tracked his career as closely as I potentially should have, so maybe I'll have to give him another rethink.
I think I've had him pretty much every year in our draft league, so I've been watching him very closely over the journey, and absolutely loved what I see from him.
All right. Still, though, at 438 and at 452, these are very, very high-risk picks. Do have to underscore that. Thanks. A Jaeger, Mira, and a Griffin will not burn you as hard as these two blokes will if they don't pan out.
Yeah, if these guys end up with a 90 average, you're really stuck. It's a really crappy situation. Whereas if Omira or Griffin ended up with a 90 average, then it just means it's been like a bit of a meh pick. It's a sort of, it hasn't worked out either way.
But you'll still make money from it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And Griffin, I guess at Griffin's price, if he averages 90, you're actually going to be really happy with that. Look, with those two guys, it depends a lot on what rookies come up and where they come up and how many midfield rookies are there going to be around. I think that Omira is a much, much better selection this year than he was last year. I think he was just way too close to the injuries last year. They rushed him through and he just wasn't ready to go last year. You'd think that they'd learned some lessons. He's had a better summer. He's playing practice games and JLT. And look, I think that if he can string together a season, and this is going to be sort of the season you would think for him, whether he's going to be able to do it or not, then I think he could average 105, 110, and that would just be a massive result from his price. And even if he averages 100, you're still doing really, really well. So I think that he's definitely not a lock for my team. He's sort of in and out, but I think he's much, much better pick than he was last year, and he's basically the same price. Griffin at 260, considering that a lot of the rookies are really expensive, and he has the ability to average 90, you would think, off the halfback Frank Blank line. I think
he's, at least I would have thought.
Yeah, well, his last two, the two seasons that he's played recently has been an average of about that 90. I'm not sure, given his age and his recent injury history, that he is going to be able to compete with those gun GWS young mids. So,
do you see him going backward, though?
Yeah, look, I could. Yeah, I think absolutely I could. Given he's had 2 years out, I think absolutely he could.
He's 32 as well, so.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, we saw what happened with Delidio last year. It's not like he came in and just scored 100 points every week.
I think I'm a lot more tempted by Griffin and O'Meara than Cornelio and Libba just because of the price points. But I just feel like we've come out of this mid-price section with four decent options on offer, and we were so tempted by the premiums as well. I am no clearer on what to do with my midfield at the end of all this than I was at the start. What I am hearing, though, is there are a lot of options to be flexible in the midfield. So depending on what rookies are available, you could potentially flex up or down to mid prices to Griffin and O'Meara. You could potentially flex down from a 600K midfielder to a 450K midfielder and a Libo or Cornelio. There's potentially a fair bit of flexibility in terms of just the sheer number of decent options that we have in the midfield this year.
I think that that's good because I think we're going to see a lot of really different structures in the midfield. We're going to see teams with 3 gun premiums, 4 gun premiums, 5 gun premiums, 6 gun premiums, no mid prices, a few mid prices. It's not really, really obvious which the best strategy is at this stage, I don't think. And it may not clear up completely before the season starts. So look, having that little bit of confusion or lack of clarity is a good thing, and having to roll the dice or gamble a little bit in the midfield, which I think we're really going to have to do, is not necessarily a bad thing. So, yeah, I just think that Fife, I know we said Dangerfield was our first pick, but Fife's my first pick now in the midfield.
All right, Mark, so if I can recap, we started off by saying season to season, structures change, player availability changes, and so you need to be flexible in what you want to do in your midfield. Then we went to the 115 plus averaging midfielders and we said it's tough to cut down which 2 or 3 players you might want to pick from this. You might even want to pick all 4. Then we got to the midfield section and we looked at quite a few players that could realistically move from that 110 average or even from that 100 average back to 110 or up to 115 plus. And there were a lot of players that you could roll the dice on in that section. In the breakout section, we're probably where we're the most tentative. And then in the mid-price section, we see potentially up to 4 viable selections. Now, please help me reconcile that. Like, as a listener, help me reconcile that with what do I do with picking my midfield this year? We started off by saying, let's do the midfield show because the picks at least, or the players, we can analyze that they're more known knowns than sort of the unknowns in the other positions. But I'm no clearer now, having listened to this podcast so far, as what to do with my team. So, what sort of guidance would you give?
I did forecast last week that this show was going to be the just pick everyone because they're all awesome show.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of, there is a
it's
little
better
bit
than in the back line of forward line where it's like, the options are all terrible, so I don't know who to pick. Like, it's a tough year this year.
That's right. The midfield, I don't want to dictate a structure to someone because like I sort of said before, I don't think that it's 100% clear which structure is going to work. I think that your reticence to pick mid prices before we had that discussion was probably a good point to fall back on because in the past, very, very rarely in the midfield actually proved to be really excellent selections. Getting an okay selection is about as good a result as you might get sometimes in the midfield. And I know that there are standouts and there are exceptions to that, but they're not that common. So that's probably something to keep in mind, but this might be the year to break the rules. I think that when there's uncertainty, that's where you can maybe do things a little bit different. And my team, I wouldn't recommend the way that my midfield is structured to somebody else, to be honest. I think that guns and rookies, probably 4 or 5 premiums and 5 rookies is probably the way to go.
I've cut my midfield so many different ways across this preseason, and I'm no closer to knowing which is the better version. I'm flipping back and forth that often. that, similar to you, Mark, it's hard to give advice on structure, especially without knowing what the rookie situation is going to look like quite at this moment. So, having said all that, exactly,
this is the awesome bit. We recommend the players. We tell you which players we would consider and what players should be on your at least short list or not be on your short list, and make your own combination.
Exactly.
Of them.
Exactly, Mark. And so I hope that the community and our listeners don't take away from this that it wasn't helpful or that we're no clearer on what the best eight are, but just that the best eight might look very different this year for a whole bunch of different people, and there may not be an absolute clear standout from that. And that's definitely going to be refined as we go through the preseason. But more than ever, whether that's through the equalization in the AFL or the amount of finals contenders or whatever it is, we've gotten to a point where you've got quite a few options. You should feel empowered and excited about potentially taking your own risks. I think our evaluations on each of the plays has been valid. We've called out the risks as necessary. But, you know, if you decide to take a risk on Josh Kennedy or Dan Hanabry, it's hard to knock that. If you want to take the risk on Cornelia, it's hard to knock that. So just take into account what we've said about each individual player. And even though we cannot be more prescriptive about a potential structure or who the absolute standouts are, know that that means that it's because you have more freedom this year to make correct options. There's less for us to warn you against. And so should be more exciting, and you should have more options than you've had in previous years, rather than feeling sort of stifled and hamstrung into picking a XYZ cookie cutter sort of team, which that in itself is good. So it might not be the most prescriptive advice, but hopefully it still leads to fun sort of Supercoach selections, Mark.
Yeah. And a bit of difference between the teams. It's good.
All right. Do you have anything to leave our listeners with? Because we've gone on overs now, and I think we've got to call it quits. So last words on the midfield before we head off.
Probably my advice would be don't pick too many of the 180,000 plus rookies.
I think mine would be try and pick as many premiums as you can in the midfield this year and underload elsewhere in your teams, because there's a good chance that you'll be able to select underpriced players that will manage at least a 110 average and have a decent shot at moving back up into that 115 bracket in 2018. And where there's value on offer, you take it, whether that's in the rookies or in the premiums. And the premiums in the midfield look extra shiny this year.
Can I just confirm one question I didn't ask, that you have Ryan Griffin way ahead of Jago O'Meara?
I did, and then I double-checked his age as we were talking through that, and then you talked about the potential upside in O'Meara. Like, I don't think you can say Griffin is going to average 110 in 2018 and he's going to return to his absolute best. I think a good scenario for Griffin would be to return and average 100, and even though that's good off a 277K price tag, like you mentioned, Mark, it's not really make or break. It's not going to win you Supercoach either. It's good, but it's not great. But O'Meara could be great. So I think I still have Griffin over O'Meara, but it's not as wide as I started off the show with. So thanks for making life harder.
So your answer is that you're having a bob each way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good way to wrap up the show. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to support the show. Supercoach Coach League codes and ranked league registration and the group invites, all those things will be posted together with this podcast. So head to supercoachcoach.com.au for those details. And next week, defenders or forwards, Mark, where do you want to go?
Up to you, buddy. I'm equally confused by both.
I'm leaning toward the forwards then, because at least there's a lot of excitement and potential to discuss there, whereas in defenders I'm a bit more in doom and gloom land. So we'll keep that last. We'll go to the forwards next week. Thanks again for the show, Mark, and we'll see you all next week.
All right. Bye. See ya.